Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party. On today's show, we plug in, power up, and press play on the latest movie based on a video game, Sega's Sonic the Hedgehog. We'll also be choosing our favourite films based on video games and highlighting some of our top picks from this year's Glasgow Film Festival. In the pod booth today, it's Ready Player One, the member of Team Filibuster who loves to run. He's our very own Sonic. It's Lee Hutchison. How are you?
Oh, I never considered that before. I feel pretty happy with that. That's the best introduction I've ever had. I feel bad for the introduction I gave you earlier on our other podcast.
I totally forgive you. And player two has entered the game. Joining him is the tails to his Sonic. It's Kim Morrison.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Excellent. Which just leaves me, I guess, as your host Dallas King as Dr. Robotnik, mainly because in the mid-90s people at school thought I was a bit like Jim Carrey. So there we go. It all ties in together. Everything has a reason.
Did Tommy Lee Jones publicly slam working with you as well?
Oh, absolutely, yes. He was always very grumpy when he was at school. Yeah, very, very grumpy man. Grumpy cat. So today's main topic of discussion is the film Sonic the Hedgehog, directed by Jeff Fowler and written by Joss Miller and Patrick Conway. After discovering a small blue fast hedgehog, a small town police officer must help him defeat an evil genius who wants to capture him for nefarious purposes. So gang, is this a film which runs rings around other video game adaptations, or is it game over for a potential franchise? Kim, let's come to you, because I think this was one of the films which you were looking forward to discussing this year. What did you make of it? What were your expectations going in, and did they live up to them?
I mean, I am a massive Sonic fangirl. Like, I was always a Sega kid. I got a Mega Drive when Sonic 2 came out, so I've been in love with Sonic since I was like 5 or 6. I have a Tails tattoo on my leg. That's how much I love Sonic. But I was still a bit like, I'm never sure, because I think a lot of like video game films, like, it's quite hard to kind of capture the thing that makes you love the video game. And I think things like platformers like Mario and Sonic and stuff, I was always just a bit like, oh, I'm not really sure. It was a weird one. Like, I enjoyed the experience while I was watching it, and I laughed quite a lot at mainly Jim Carrey, I have to say. I'm not sure I would ever watch it again, though, so I don't know what that really says about it. However, I would definitely completely go and see a sequel, so it's a weird one to place. But I think it sort of turned out exactly like I expected it was going to be, to be honest, so I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I guess we'll see when we sort of dive into it in a bit more detail. But Lee, were you a Sega kid, or were you a Nintendo guy growing up?
Yeah, I was a Sonic and Mega Drive person. So yeah, I got the Mega Drive as a kid and got Sonic 1 and 2. And to this day, I still remember the cheats to get the level select on Sonic. Up, down, left, right, and A and start at the same time. I'm not like a big gamer. I've had some of the consoles over the years, but like, I will always go back to like the best times I ever had as a quote-unquote gamer was like being a kid and playing Sonic. I'm trying to master it. You can get the Sonic game sort of remastered on the Apple TV, but you have to use the really tiny little crappy Apple TV remote to try and use it. So you're trying to bounce and move and skip and so on with just like the tiniest of keypads, and it's kind of not going too well. So I never seem to get beyond sort of the second zone in sort of the Apple TV version of Sonic. So I really miss my Mega Drive, and yeah, I had some of my best times doing it. And I remembered playing actually Sonic with Kim as well. My flatmate, like when I was like much younger, had like a Mega Drive, or maybe it was mine, I don't know, it was one of ours. And just like, it would be always one of these things of like, let's all go back to our place and play Sonic, because that's always a fun thing to do. And so I've just always got strong kind of memories with Sonic that I don't have with any other video game. So it was always going to happen, whether it came out now or in 30 years. If there was a Sonic movie, I felt emotionally compelled to see it.
I feel now in the minority because I was a Nintendo guy growing up. I had a SNES.
And boo.
Boo, I know. So, you know, Mario Kart, and that was always my thing, to the point where I would always get so good at the battle mode that, you know, I would try to remain undefeated, to the point where I couldn't play it. You know, if like people came around and they had younger children, they would just put the, let them play the SNES or whatever. And then I'd end up playing and I'd have to just totally whip their arse in the battle mode. And it just, I felt really bad about it. But part of me was like, I'm not going to lose. So yeah, I was never really a Sonic guy. I mean, I think I had a friend who had a Mega Drive, so we'd go over and sort of play it. But it was never, I never really had the connection that you guys had to it. Are you, either of you, sort of tempted to get one of these sort of new upgraded mini Mega Drives with like 100 odd games on it, or does it, do any of you actually, Kim, do you still have your Mega Drive?
Oh yeah, I've still got my Mega Drive.
Original, excellent.
Yeah.
Lee, are you tempted to go to Cash Converters or CEX and try and pick up one secondhand to get back into it?
Yeah, like I would love to do that. Like I do see the sort of these Sonic Mega Drive games with like the built-in things. So it's definitely on the agenda too. Like I bought recently, well, like a year and a half ago, the PlayStation mini version that had like 20 built-in games and so on. And like I've been playing that, but like it would only be every so often I play like a driving game or Tekken with my girlfriend. I'm kind of like, I really need her to leave the house for a couple days so I can just sit down, have some quality time with this PlayStation and play like Metal Gear Solid and some of those kind of games. So, and really dive into the original Grand Theft Auto 1. So yeah, if I'm struggling to make the time for my little mini PlayStation, I really want to make the time for the Mega Drive. So I will get it. Maybe I'll put it on my Amazon wish list for my birthday, and hopefully my girlfriend will buy it for me.
I guess we'll see. So I guess I'm going to try and defer to you guys as the Sonic experts. I mean, what did you make of the film, I guess, in relation to the game's origins? Because I guess there's a wee bit of setup at the beginning where you sort of follow Sonic as a young hedgehog, and there was an owl, I think, was it Longbeak or something like that, and then suddenly, almost instantaneously, he's being chased by a bunch of what looks like other hedgehogs in armor, and then he has to throw a ring and then ends up on Earth, and that's where the sort of main storyline kicks off. So I mean, I'm guessing that is all canon to Sonic. And so how did it, I guess, in terms of relation to the game and sticking as closely to the original, did it sort of measure up in that way?
I think as far as I'm aware, the whole backstory of Sonic was that Robotnik rounded up all the cute animals in Sonic's world and turned them into his robot baddies, which is why whenever Sonic like beats one, a wee like squirrel or a skunk or a rabbit or something bounces away. And that was basically what Sonic was trying to do. He was just pal to the animals and trying to like defeat Robotnik's baddies to get rid of all his minions, but also like release them. So I feel like I'm not sure about the owl guardian. I don't think that was ever a thing. I think the things chasing him at the beginning looked like Knuckles. What is he like, an echidna or something? Yeah, he's not a hedgehog, he's something else. It looked like him under the mask or whatever. So I don't know if that's something they might go in sequels, because in Sonic 3 Knuckles starts off as a baddie before he starts becoming their pal, so that could be a thing. But yeah, I think the I can't even remember why Sonic collects rings in the game. I think it's just a health thing. There's one game where right at the end of the level, if you get the bonus stage, a big ring appears and you jump through and you go another dimension. But I can't remember how. Like they just don't spend a lot of time kind of setting up the backstory in the original Mega Drive games, do they? There's not really a lot of time for that. But I thought it made sense. It was a good enough reason to have him coming from his little magical place to Earth and sort of having this way of escaping and everything. So I thought it was a good enough backstory for him, really.
Yeah, and Lee, did it sort of tie into your memories of Sonic and in terms of setting up the storyline as it went forward?
Absolutely not. before we were kind of going into cinema, I went to see this one with my girlfriend on Friday. And we were chatting about Sonic, and she was like, "Oh yeah, he's an alien." I was like, "No, he's a hedgehog." She's like, no, I think he's an alien in this film." I was like, I mean, I could barely remember sort of the trailers. I watched the original one that generated all the outrage, and then I kind of was like, and we're like, we're sitting there before the film starts, like surrounded by a bunch of kids and some families, and here's like two people in their like 20s and 30s, just like, right, Wikipedia. And I was like, "Look, he is a hedgehog. That's what Wikipedia says." And then when the film starts, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I've come from another universe," I was like, "The hell's this? Who the hell's this?" And I was sitting there like, I only ever played Sonic 1 and 2, and I played 3 quite a bit, but not religiously. And then I sort of watched some of the cartoon where he talked, and I always found that quite annoying that he talked, because, yeah, he just sounded like a bit of an asshole in the cartoon. So it was like, I don't recall there being an owl, and who the hell are these owls? And it was just like, I was thrown off by this, and like, that he was an alien and stuff, and I was like, have I missed a huge chunk of like sort of Sonic, or is it like Sonic, you know, new comic book spin-offs where it's kind of tying into that? I had no idea what the hell was going on. I was like, right, okay, this isn't maybe my Sonic. Not that that's an issue or anything, I just didn't know what the hell was going on.
Hashtag not my Sonic. So I mean, you sort of touched on it there, Lee, about the CGI, because this was one of the films last year that caused a huge sort of backlash against the first initial trailer, to the point where people didn't like the look of Sonic so much that the filmmakers decided to course correct and basically put loads of CGI animators who had spent a lot of time designing something back to the drawing board, and the fabled 80-hour weeks to basically try and get this movie ready for its release date. In terms of the initial look to the final product, how did people feel like that? Because I know that, you know, people are starting to sort of fight back and stick up for CGI animators and stuff, especially around Cats, in that, you know, people were making fun of Cats at the Academy Awards, and, you know, the people were saying, well, it's not really the animator's fault. It's really, you know, any amount of CGI can't make up for a bad story. And yeah, Cats is just a horrific story. So what did people make of the final look of Sonic compared to its original ones? Lee, let's come to you. What did you make of them?
I thought it looked pretty spot on, to be honest, in terms of what I would recognize as Sonic. So yeah, I was impressed. And yeah, like, I get that it was a whole frustration thing, and but I do respect that they kind of course corrected. I think they realized they'd made a mistake. I do think it can be an issue to listen to her, but I thought it was a sort of pretty stupid looking kind of Sonic. I do think that CGI people should be compensated, and I think there's a whole discussion to be had there that's separate. But yeah, I thought the Sonic in this looked really good, and I was like, I get that, I like that. Yeah, it was fine with me. It passed the test.
And Kim, what did you make of the design?
Yeah, no, I thought he looked really good. Like, I think if that was, yeah, if you were going to CGI Sonic, I think that's what he should look like. I don't know what they tried to do with that first version. Like, I think they maybe tried to make him look more, like, less cartoony, more like real, like what would an actual giant blue hedgehog look like? And he just looked weird. Like, his eyes were too far apart, and he just had the wrong kind of teeth, and he just looked a bit, it just looked a bit too human-y. I think they made him look more like cartoony, and that was a good thing. It's the same as Lee said. I don't totally agree with listening to angry people on Twitter saying that they've ruined their childhood and that they should go back and spend all this money changing the film, but I just don't understand why they did it so wrong in the first place. Like, he's just a really, like, iconic character, and he's always kind of looked the same, apart from, like, in the sort of most recent cartoons where they gave them all really long limbs and made Knuckles really jacked for some reason. Most of the rest of the time they've looked the same, so I don't know why they tried to change it in the first place, really.
Yeah, I don't think a sort of kids film based on a video game about a fictional blue hedgehog needed to go for sort of photorealistic sort of style. I think they've probably made the right decision. But what did you guys make of Ben Schwartz as the voice of Sonic, our very own John Ralphio?
He was pretty perfect, to be honest. Like, in terms of, I had issues with sort of the character of Sonic in this, but I thought he was a pretty good voice for it. Like, in terms of what I expect of Sonic to be, he probably would have been, like, up there on my list of I would expect him to maybe be it. So yeah, I suppose he's ticked off BB-8, John Ralphio from Parks and Rec, and now Sonic. I thought he was a pretty cool one.
Yeah, I thought it was, at least pretty much what I expected. Like, Sonic, I mean, he doesn't really speak in the games. He speaks more in the cartoon and stuff, but he always just gives off this sort of, like, wisecracking, like, personality. Like, he's always sitting there, like, tapping his foot if you take too long or whatever, or getting annoyed at you. So, yeah, it kind of seemed like he was going to be this kind of, like, Joker, like, wise-ass kind of person. So, yeah, it came across pretty perfect as well, I would say.
And I guess for playing the straight man in this film, for the second time in a decade, James Marsden is been reduced to playing opposite a CGI character. He was in Hop 10 years ago. We had to help the Easter Bunny, you know, solve a mystery, and he's doing the same again here. What do you guys make of James Marsden? I have a lot of time for him and feel that he should be a bigger star by now than he actually is. You know, with like this likes of Enchanted and stuff like that. I think he's got a real sort of comic talent, and I would like to see him do more than just be the straight man to a CGI bunny or hedgehog.
When I was watching it the other day, we're currently doing a bit of an Ally McBeal rewatch. Well, it's a rewatch for me. My girlfriend's never watched it. And I kind of had forgot that he was in Ally McBeal. So I kind of gave my girlfriend a bit of a spoiler warning. I was like, this guy's going to be an Ally McBeal. And James Marsden's career's never seemed to kind of like properly exploded the way I thought it would be. I kind of had read up on IMDb trivia afterwards. And by the way, I highly recommend people check out the IMDb trivia for Sonic, because there is some amount of rubbish in there. I'm going to tell you, like, there was one bit that made me laugh. It was like the first trivia. It was like when Sonic says it's one small step for man, one giant leap for like hedgehogs or something. That was a reference to Neil Armstrong's famous thing. So, oh Jesus Christ, that's reaching. But there's a great one in it where it's like when Dr. Robotnik is standing behind sort of a virtual reality simulator and running away from a dinosaur, that is actually a reference to when Jim Carrey was heavily linked with being Dr. Ian Malcolm in the original Jurassic Park. I mean, that is some galaxy brain nonsense. I mean, there's no way in hell like anyone thought that was going to be the case. Oh my god, I can't believe it. What was the question again?
Why isn't James Marsden a bigger star?
Yeah, he's... Oh yes, so I noticed on IMDb trivia that Paul Rudd was their number one choice for this. And then you kind of get the impression that sort of James Marsden has become sort of the bargain basement in a way. Paul Rudd, so if you can't get him, you have to kind of get this guy. And I don't think he has the charm or perhaps the personality of someone like Paul Rudd, but he's maybe found himself a little niche as sort of like this kind of, if Paul Rudd's busy, if he's working on an Ant-Man, you can hire James Marsden.
And Kim, what do you make of James Marsden?
He's one of those people that, like, I actually just had to look him up on IMDb because I was like, I know I've seen him in things and I can't even remember what he's been in. And I've just looked up and I was like, holy cow, he was in X-Men? Like, I've just completely wiped him from my memory as an actor. So, it's probably not a great endorsement of him. I think he's all right. I just think he's, I feel like he's maybe just a bit forgettable, clearly, for me. Like, I watch things like X-Men that I would say are some of my favourite superhero movies and completely forget who he is, but that's maybe just because I really hate Cyclops. So
yeah, well, you know, his face is covered by the visor most of the time.
Yeah,
so yeah,
I'm going to...
That'll be right.
I'll cut myself some slack.
But, I mean, I guess in a film like this, it is a poison chalice and you are probably going to be forgotten when you're against a CGI hedgehog and also going up against the scene stealing, scenery chewing, just going all out Jim Carrey, going back to his sort of mid-90s Ace Ventura mask style, I'm going to do whatever I want and no one's going to stop me kind of role in this. It was rather exhausting watching him, but in a good way, it was nice to see him back to that sort of level. So Kim, I'll go to you first. What did you make of Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik?
Yeah, I really liked him. Like, I think, like you said, Jim Carrey in his sort of, like, classic roles is just, it's always funny, it's always brilliant. And it's hard, again, because the whole thing in video games where the characters don't really speak, it's kind of hard to get an idea of Robotnik's personality, but, you know, he must be a bit nuts if he's locking up small animals inside robots and, like, just fighting with a blue hedgehog all the time. But I thought he was really good. I think every single time I laughed was something that he said as opposed to, like, the fart jokes that Sonic was making. I thought he was really good. And I thought right at the end, like, the hints of a more mad scientist Robotnik coming across, again, as the kind of thing that would make me go and see a sequel. It looked really interesting. So yeah, no, I thought he was, I mean, I was speaking to my boyfriend about it and he's like, I'm not sure about Jim Carrey's Robotnik. And I was like, really? Because I think like he is, like, he'll just throw himself into the absolute nutsness of it and just totally embrace it. And I think he did a really good job with that.
And Lee, what did you make of Carey's return to his comedic anarchic roots?
I think he did a good role, to be honest, Alice. Yeah, it sort of seemed to make me kind of think of sort of 90s Jim Carrey in terms of this is a choice of film and a performance. Yeah, I thought it was quite good. I think that they could have maybe mixed up a little bit with some of his bits and pieces. Some of the jokes were a bit too kind of retread. But yeah, I thought he was pretty fine. I think it was, yeah, fine Jim Carrey.
Just a fine Jim Carrey. Well, I thought it was nice to see him sort of like swing for the fences again, because, you know, he's had a few sort of hits and misses recently. He's sort of been almost more known for his sort of crazy sort of political views and appearances on the red carpets rather than his films. You know, he had a great run of dramatic roles, but he's sort of going back to his comedic roots, and it's always a sort of welcome thing to see. So I'm excited to see what he does next, and it's if they do get to the stage where they do make a sequel, and surprisingly for a video game movie, it looks like it is doing well at the box office to the point where we could see a sequel. So I'd be interested to see where he goes from there. But I think he's just one of those characters that you just can't control, and I think you've just got to let him do his thing, whether that's for the benefit or the detraction of the final film. I guess it's up for people to decide, but I mean, it could be a Marmite performance, because I know there was someone at the library who was saying that they were going to see Sonic the Hedgehog and they had to go and take their nephew to it, and I said, oh well, you know, they asked me, is it any good? I said, well, I think it kind of depends, do you like Jim Carrey? And they went, no, not really. And I went, well, you're probably not going to like this film then, because it really sort of depends on your tolerance, I think, for his shtick. But I guess we'll see. So in terms of, you know, the future, it is certainly hinted at by the end of it that you've got the sort of bald, giant moustached Dr. Robotnik, and there is, I think, you know, it's been out for a couple of weeks, I think we can stray into spoiler territories, that, you know, there is a mid-credit sequence where it introduces a new character in Tails. So are people excited for where the film franchise may go if a sequel is greenlit, and where do you think it might go as Sonic fans? Do you know where you would like to see the story headed?
I think going into this, I sort of said that the bit I was least looking forward to was like the whole kind of buddy cop element of between Sonic and the human person. So I think it would be nice to see it just go back to more like, I don't know, Sonic and Tails going to a different world and just fighting Robotnik or something. Like, I was so excited to see Tails. I think my favourite part of the entire film was the first credits chunk, because it was all done like Mega Drive style and it was just such like fan service perfection. I was so happy. And then when Tails popped up, I was like, ah, this whole 5 minutes is just my favorite chunk of the film. Like, he's so cute. I just adore him. He's my favorite video game character ever. So I was so excited when he popped up. But yeah, I think if it went more, yeah, just like mad cute animals and robots and just Tails and Sonic kind of fighting it, and maybe get Knuckles involved as well and just fighting against Robotnik. Maybe he's built some, maybe that's because he's stuck in that mushroom world, maybe he's building these crazy robots using the animals then, and it'll go more back to like the sort of game story. That's the kind of thing that I would like to see, just being a bit more like fun and mad with it, I think would be the way I would like it to go.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'd like to see it maybe in that sort of fantasy world of sort of like tying it into the games and sort of the concepts of that. And I was the same as you. Like, the end credits and the sort of the two stingers were the highlights of the film for me. Like, I was just loving the design elements where it was kind of like, it just made me think of like, oh my god, this is just like the game. And the only thing that was like the the thing that really bugged me was I wish the film had opened with like a Sega that's just so synonymous with kind of the Sonic. I wish that was sort of how they opened it, sort of to tie it in, but maybe that's just me. If like they'd done that, I'd probably given it like an automatic 5 stars.
Well, you know, they did have a nice moment with the Paramount logo at the beginning where they'd removed the stars and replaced them with the rings, so you know they did do a bit of that. But yeah, no, I think yeah, you probably were looking for like those iconic sort of sound effects and stuff of like the Mega Drive loading up and that. But I mean, we can now sort of guess see where this sort of film ranks in terms of your, you know, favorite video game movies, because you know in terms of quality they're, I think it's fair to say that some of them are not very good. But I'd be keen to know, you know, just one pick, you know, you get one pick of what your favorite video game adaptation is. So Lee, we'll come to you first. What have you picked for us?
I was sweating that you would ask for more than one, to be honest, because I looked at one where it was like the top 50 of all time. I was like, no. So one I've gone for, and you know, it's not exactly the kind of greatest by any stretch, but it had sort of an impact on me as a kind of in my early teens, I guess. And that was Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within. And I just remembered such a huge conversation at the time. I mean, simpler times. This was like a month before 9/11. You know, kind of simpler times for kind of movies and concepts. And there's this idea that this film, with its kind of CGI characters, could in fact lead to a day when actors would be made obsolete. And that was so much of what the debate around the film was. And it was so interesting to go into this film and think, is this potentially the future? And it feels crazy to think, you know, we're just shy of 20 years on from the film and it hasn't really come to pass. You know, there's been elements of kind of things like, say, Carrie Fisher being used as sort of CGI or younger kind of people being used, but nothing kind of with what they expected from sort of Final Fantasy to go on and achieve. So yeah, it was sort of a really interesting sort of time capsule. And you know, the film obviously disappointed at the box office. I remember going to see it on a half empty cinema in Aberdeen Beach when it came out. And yeah, it was a kind of throwback to a simpler time and one where it felt like anything was possible with CGI.
And Kim, what have you selected as your favourite video game adaptation?
All my favourite video game films seem to be ones of games that I'm just too chicken shit to actually play. My favourite one ever is Doom, which came out in 2005. And this is one of those films that, like, I feel like I have a terrible taste in horror films. I'm constantly arguing with people about films that I think are amazing, but I just don't, like, no one seems to like Doom. Like, everyone is always ragging on it. And I'm like, why? It's just so, it's one of those films that's just, like, so much fun. And it's, I think it's, like, a total comfort movie for me, because if it's ever on the TV, I'll watch it. I think I've got it on DVD, but the other night I was scrolling through Netflix with my boyfriend and I was like, there's Doom, let's watch Doom. And, like, we did. It's just, like, it's got The Rock in it. It's just got, like, they go into space to, like, help a space station that's got, like, a distress call, which is never a good idea, and they've been taken over by these, like, I can't even remember what it is. It's like a virus thing they're injecting into people to see if it'll make them superhuman, but it makes evil people go bad. And it's just brilliant. There's a amazing sequence where a guy gets knocked unconscious, and when he comes back round, it's like in first person shooter mode and he's like shooting all the aliens. And it's just like, I think it's really good monster effects. It's a lot of just like splatter gore. It's just like a good, like, switch off your brain for like an hour and a half and sit and watch it. I've probably seen it more times than anyone should ever watch that film, but I just love it. It's fantastic. So yeah, I would recommend, go and watch Doom. It's on Netflix.
Did I see this one at the cinema with you as well, Kim?
Oh, maybe. I can't actually remember.
I think I did.
Chances are, maybe I've seen it so many times now I've sort of forgotten when the first time I saw it was. But it's definitely one of my favorites.
I think you should actually tweet that, Kim, you know, and The Rock will surely see that you're probably Doom's number one fan and probably give you a retweet on that one. So,
yes, I might try.
So
it.
You're the person who gives me all my royalties off of Doom, so there we go.
Yep.
I normally prefer films about video games, such as, say, Scott Pilgrim versus World, The Rock again in Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, which sort of takes a spin on and how you play a video game, or the, I'm just going to shout out to the fantastic documentary King of Kong, you know, Fistful of Dollars. Is
god damn, I should,
well, you see, that's
one.
Not, well, it's not based on a video game. You see, we're doing ones that are actually based on a video game. So I mean, I've got a soft spot for the first Resident Evil, you know, there's some great moments in it. It's not really all that good, but there's some great moments, like the scene where the guy, Colin Salmon's trying to get into the thing and he gets sort of sliced up in the thing with all the lasers. That's a great sequence. But I'm going to actually have to pick a film from last year, and it's actually Detective Pikachu, which I really, really enjoyed. I know a lot of people rag on this film, but I thought it did a really good job, probably a better job than Sonic, of sort of introducing a layman like me to this world. It sort of explored the world, gave you reasons as to why, what was going on. You know, Ryan Reynolds turned out to be the perfect voice for Pikachu. You know, and you've got this whole sort of mystery. You know, it's kind of obvious when you think about it what it is. And I'm sorry, has anyone not seen Detective Pikachu?
I have seen it.
I have not, but don't mind. I spoil stuff for myself all the time on Wikipedia. So
all right,
cool.
Okay. Well, essentially, it turns out that Ryan Reynolds was put inside the body of a Pikachu, and it turns out that Ryan Reynolds is the dad of the main character who talks to Pikachu. He's the only one who can understand it. And it's like, that's all very well, but are you telling me that this guy does not recognize the voice of his own dad is coming from this Pikachu? It's like, once you think about it that way, the film probably just loses all sort of sense of complete thing. But I still liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it was fun. A sort of caffeine addicted Pikachu played voiced by Ryan Reynolds was a lot of fun for me, and I thought it was great. So yeah, that one's my pick. So yeah. But yeah, I think we've all picked a good selection there. You know, I've got a soft spot for Doom as well, just because it's got The Rock in it as well. That was the main reason I watched it. And Doom was one of those games on the PC that you'd play all the time as well. So have they ever made a Duke Nukem film? That's one I'd always want to see, if they ever managed to do that. But yeah, most video game adaptations are not very good. But hopefully we've picked a few highlights there. And like you say, you might be able to... I think you could probably catch most of them on Netflix, actually, at the moment. Do a triple bill at the weekend if you want. But, you know, this weekend you may be at the Glasgow Film Festival, which starts today. And Team Filibuster will be at all the galas and the auditoriums and on the red carpets to bring you the very best coverage. But we're going to give you now our top picks for What's to Catch between the 26th of February and the 8th of March, while you're not out trying to catch a glimpse of Arbats' stunt double driving the Batcycle down Socky Hall Street, of course. So let's go to Lee first. What is the first film you picked for us?
Do you guys like secrets?
Love secrets. I love secrets.
So basically, there's this film called The Death of Dick Long, which I'm a big fan of. I caught it last year. A24 film from one of the directors of Swiss Army Man. And everyone that sees The Death of Dick Long is compelled by watching it, because you watch it, you think, I am not going to tell anyone that twist, but I want to make sure that everyone goes to see this film so that they can then take part in this sort of secret, and you can talk about the surprise at the heart of the film, because it's not one of these ones where it's like spoiled. It feels like it's had a limited audience in terms of people that have seen it. I mean, we recorded over 2 hours of interviews with the lead cast last year, and we all kind of agreed we weren't going to discuss the ending and the twist, and we would dance around it. And I have sat on this film for a good few months, and I've not been able to chat about the goddamn ending and twist at the heart of this film that is so unforgettable, so ballsy, and kind of makes a lot of sense. And I want people to go see this film so I can talk about it, so I can be free and share a secret with other people. So yes, The Death of Dick Long is something really, really special in terms of what it encourages an audience to do and to go with, and it has got such balls.
It's got balls. Well, I will be seeing those balls because I have a ticket for it to watch during the festival. So, Kim, what's the first film you've picked for us?
So I sadly can't go to as much of Glasgow Film Fest as I would like to, but one of the things I'm definitely going to is the opening night of the Fright Fest strand of the festival. So one of the films is the first film that's on at that, and it's Death of a Vlogger. I listen to a podcast called Strong Language Violent Scenes, and they go to Fright Fest in London every year. So all the films that they kind of get down there, they talk about them loads because they've both been, and they frequently get guests on that have done the films as well. And they had Graham Hughes, who's the director of Death of a Vlogger, on one of their episodes. And not only was he absolutely freaking hilarious, but he just made the film sound brilliant. So it's about It's a horror mockumentary where a vlogger gains viral fame after one of his eerie videos contains an alleged out-of-this-world haunting. And yeah, apparently I do like a found footage kind of horror. I always think they're a bit spookier, but I just have heard really good things about this, that it's really creepy, and like all the effects were done like practically, and they look quite impressive and challenging, so I'm really excited to see it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to being hopefully very creeped out by that one.
Excellent. Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to try and catch on. Sadly, I won't be down for the Fright Fest side of it, but hopefully it will get a proper release and I'll be able to catch that one. One which I'm excited for is a film from 1994, in fact, and that is Tammy and the T-Rex. And I don't know why I've never heard about this film before it appeared in the catalogue, but it is about a young man called Michael who is mauled by some big cats at the local zoo, and a mad scientist transplants his brain into a full-sized animatronic T-Rex, and then he stomps around town attempting to be reunited with his high school sweetheart Tammy. Now, this is apparently was cut to shreds to be released as a PG-13 movie, but has been fully restored with a gore cut. So there's lots of practical effects and sort of gore thrown in. So it sounds like it's going to be a great one to watch with a late night audience. It sounds, from the small bits I've seen so far, like it could be up there with The Room for in terms of performance style and quality of effects and stuff like that. But the amazing thing is, why I've not heard of it before, is because this film stars Paul Walker from Fast and Furious and She's All That as Michael, and also Denise Richards as Tammy. So before they were famous. Yeah, this is one which you definitely have to catch at the film festival, because I think it's probably going to be your only opportunity to see it on the big screen, and I think it's going to be quite the experience. So yes. So, Lee, what have you got next for us?
Christ, how the hell do you top Paul Walker?
I should have saved it for my number one pick, but yeah.
Oh, my word. Yeah. Well, this is a film I caught at the London Film Festival, and I'm really excited to kind of catch this film again. I think it'd be a great film to catch with your pals. I would love to watch this film with you guys, and it's Our Ladies. So it's set in 1990s Scotland, and a group of Catholic schoolgirls from the Highlands get an opportunity to go to Edinburgh, where I'm from, for a choir competition, but they're more interested in drinking, partying and shagging than winning the competition. This is a film that I wasn't too sure what to expect when it popped up at London. There was no trailer. I wasn't familiar with the book that was adapted from. I just knew it had some cast in it that I really liked. Marley Sue from Anna and the Apocalypse, and Kate Dickey. So I went along to check this one out, and I had such a great time. And it's been one of those films that I feel like I'm recommending to friends all the time, that, oh, you've got to catch this when it comes to Glasgow. You have got to catch this film when it gets a release in late April. I think this film is such a treat, and I think people from Edinburgh will get a kick from it. It's interesting to see how they've made sort of Edinburgh back into the 90s again. And yeah, I thought it was such a treat. So many laughs. As a great group of young female talent from Scotland that I really hope will go on to great things as well. So yeah, an absolute treat.
I mean, this sounds like this could be this year's Wild Rose, which played like gangbusters last year at Glasgow, because it was set in Glasgow. I don't know how it will work with it being set in Edinburgh, of course. You know, Glasgow and Edinburgh seem to have quite the rivalry between the two of them, but I'm sure...
It does feature the HMV from Glasgow, though, so, you know, home crowd is going to get represented.
Hang on, are you saying that this film has the HMV from Glasgow pretending to be an HMV in Edinburgh?
Correct, Alice.
Oh, my goodness gracious. This is up there with, you know, the travesty of the Trainspotting 2 thing, where, you know, the geography is all wrong. It's just gonna irk people, I think. You know, this it could lose the audience completely. Hopefully that won't be the case. So Kim, what have you chosen for your second pick for the fest?
My second choice is the second opening film from Fright Fest, which is Synchronic. It stars Anthony Mackie and Jamie Doran, and this is another one that played at Fright Fest down in London, and I've just heard like amazing things about it. It's says two New Orleans paramedics' lives are ripped apart when encountering a series of horrific deaths linked to a new designer drug with bizarre otherworldly effects. And yeah, apparently it's just definitely one that you want to experience on the big screen, because it's just like visually stunning and a bit trippy and amazing. So again, I don't know too much about it outside of that, because I'm trying to like desperately avoid spoiler territory for all these films. I'm going to see that like everyone I follow on Twitter has already seen, but yeah, no, it looks like an amazing one. I am very excited to see those first two in a chunk together, so yeah.
Yeah, no, I think this was, Lee, did you catch this one at London Film Festival? Because I know a few people that we saw it when it was there and were raving about it as well. Did you catch that one?
No, sadly, I had plans to see it, but I think something got in the way and it meant I had to pass on it. So yeah, I'd had hoped to see this one at the Fright Fest, but yeah, it never kind of worked out for me to see it in Glasgow either. So I will hopefully catch it soon.
No, I think with it being at the London and now Glasgow, I think it sounds like it should get a proper release in the UK, probably around April time or something like that. So definitely going to try and catch that one out as well. But second pick for me is going to be The Truth. This is Hirokazu Kurita's first film made outside Japan and features a dream cast of Catherine Villeneuve, Juliette Binoche, and of course one of our favourites, Ethan Hawke. Catherine Villeneuve is an imperious old-school movie diva who's just published far from reliable memoirs that depict her as a devoted mother, and this prompts a visit from her estranged daughter, who is played by Juliette Binoche, and in tow with her husband, Hank, played by Ethan Hawke, and their daughter. The stage is set for confrontation, home truths, and long-nurtured resentments as everyone edges towards their version of the truth. It's played at the Venice Film Festival, and yeah, it's just the cast alone, but also Kurita did the Sublime Shoplifters from a couple of years ago, so I think this is going to be one of those sort of breakout hits of the festival, and it's distributed by Curzon this year, so they're already having a cracking time with Parasite and Portrait of a Lady on Fire, so I'm sure this will be another hit for them. So Lee, what is your final pick for us for the Glasgow Film Festival?
So yeah, this is one that me and you got to catch a few months ago, Dallas, and we've kind of been raving about since. It's only got like 50 followers on Twitter, so it deserves more attention on Twitter in terms of get that account followed and as a film, and that's Scott Graham's Run. So this was a film I had next to no interest in seeing in London. I think I was going to go see something else, and I think you convinced me to check it out.
I did, and indeed.
Yeah, so tip of the hat to yourself. So it's set in Fraserburgh, of all places, and a young man dreams of escapism through late night drag races. Finney used to be one of them, but now he works at a fish factory, and his son's turn to race, till one night he steals the boy's car for one last joyride. So like, you kind of hear that synopsis and you think, oh, it's going to be quite a laddish film, and it's kind of one of these, you know, we've maybe seen it all before, it's going to be sort of some bargain basement Fast and the Furious about family, whatever. Sonic did have a good Fast and the Furious joke, I must have. but yeah, Run was really good, a really good examination of what it's like to live in sort of rural Aberdeenshire. I kind of have lived that when I was sort of 18, and but kind of escaped it really and moved to a city and loved it. But yeah, I think this film absolutely nails sort of what it's like to live in sort of that kind of area of the northeast of Scotland. And I think the performances from Mark Stanley, again, Marley Sue, you know, this is like a Marley Sue Stan podcast, I think, now. But yeah, lots of great kind of performances, and something that I think's a really kind of special film, and one I hope when it gets a wider release on sort of the 13th of March. I know it's getting a BAFTA screening push here in Edinburgh and Glasgow, so I hope the kind of audience for this film gets to see it and then sort of spreads the word.
Yeah, no, I've been a big fan of Scott Graham's ever since I saw Shell several years ago, but yeah, no, I was really impressed by The Fast and the Fraserburgh, and hopefully many people will once it gets a release as well. So Kim, what have you picked as your final selection for the fest?
The one I'm most excited about, funnily enough, is one I'm not going to be able to get to see, which I'm very sad, but it's Saint Maud, which is about a recently born again Maud is a young Scarborough nurse, visibly disintegrating both mentally and emotionally as she strives for religious salvation from the demons plaguing her. This is one that I hadn't heard about until like last week or something, and then suddenly, just like, I follow a lot of horror film people on Twitter, everyone just seemed to go nuts about it, and one tweet that I read was like, do not Google this film, just go into it and just see it, which always excites me. I'm always like, ah, something a bit different that's not like really obvious. So I've not like seen a trailer or anything from it apart from this description from the Glasgow Film Fest website. That's all I know. I do know that the release date in the UK was meant to be a lot later. It's kind of got pushed up to April now because people are quite excited about it. So yeah, I'm sad that I'm going to miss it at Fright Fest, but I will be going to see it at the cinema as soon as possible. Just everyone has been talking about how amazing it is, and yeah, I'm always excited for a horror film that actually looks like it's going to be scary for a change.
Lee, do you want to quickly talk about how great it is?
it's such a great film, Kim. I caught this one in October at London. I caught it, like, I don't think Dallas was in London yet. And when I kind of met up with him, like, I think it was like the day after, sort of, I saw St. Maud, I was like, I was pretty much like your Twitter feed kind of rolled into one human being of like, Dallas, I know you have this opportunity to go to this sort of like afternoon tea thing where you might be able to interview people. I think you should blow that off and go and try and make your way along to St. Maud. St. Maud is a fantastic film. Has a dreadful trailer. Usually A24 films have fantastic trailers. This one was absolutely shocking. but yeah, it certainly leaves a strong impression with you. And I'm desperate to talk about it with you in the future. Really fantastic central performance. I think like Rose Glass is going to be a director to watch out for. She's going to go into great things, and the less people know the better. And it has got one of the most unforgettable kind of closing shots of the past year, so prepare to be shocked, blown away and amazed. So yeah, we'll make sure you see it in April.
Amazing.
I'll do babysitting for you if you need to.
Thank you.
I will echo all of that. When I saw Rose Glass did a quick Q&A after the film, and I nearly thought about putting my hand up and going, who do I bill for a new pair of trousers? Because there's a jump scare in there that is one of the best jump scares I have seen, probably since The Descent in 2005. God. So high praise indeed. So yeah,
I'm so excited.
I'm sorry, you just hyped it up for, and now you still can't see it for another 2 months. Yeah. I know, I'm sorry we did that. But my final pick is a film which I've already seen, not at a festival or anything like that, but I saw couple of years ago. It was one of my favourite films of that year, but they're doing it in a very special way at the festival, and that is Train to Busan. Fantastic Korean zombie movie, and they're doing it, they always do great event cinema in Glasgow, and they are doing this in a special screening underneath Grand Central Station, under the arches apparently, so I'm sure I'm going to have to make my way through a zombie outbreak to get to the screening. Obviously that, you know, is, you know, slightly more maybe timely given everything that's going on in the world with the coronavirus, so it may take on a new life of its own, but I'm really excited to see this one again with an audience. And yeah, it's, you know, Korean cinema's on the crest of a wave at the moment thanks to Parasite, and I just can't wait to sort of revisit this one in an interactive setting, because I think it's going to bring something truly extra to the film. Has everyone else here seen Train to Busan?
Nope.
You haven't?
I've seen it, yeah. I love it. I did actually, I thought about going to see it, because I think we all talked about the fact that they were doing the screening at Glasgow Film Fest, but then when I saw it was like an immersive thing, zombies give me the absolute fear. Like, zombie films are like, I watched even like World War Z, I watched that the other day for the first time, and I was still like, oh my God, I hate getting chased, period. Like, the thought of getting chased, but getting chased by zombies is like my absolute worst nightmare. So I was like, I don't think I can even suffer a potential like 5 minutes of getting chased by actual zombies to go and see this film, because I think I would just have nightmares for ages. So I ducked out on that one, but it's so good. I saw it on it was on Film 4 like recently, I think maybe at Halloween, and I hadn't seen it till then, but it amplifies up that whole claustrophobia of getting chased by zombies by like, we'll put them all on a train with you, that'll be great. So it's brilliant, it's so good, and I think it's been potentially the only zombie film I've ever cried at. So yes, excellent, you should go and watch it, it's fantastic.
I'm actually pretty much the same with you. I felt really emotional towards the end, which is not something you would expect with a zombie movie. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a star-making turn in there from Ma Dong-suk, who is like the big burly guy who's trying to protect his wife and kid and stuff like that. And he is now going to be in the new Marvel film, The Eternals. So he's going to have a huge career. So I'm very excited to see what happens with that. But yeah, I will report back from my, hopefully unscathed from my zombie screening of that one.
Yeah.
But finally on today's episode, we've got our normal weekly recommendations. But today I want to quickly discuss something, and that's Twitter, and more specifically, film Twitter. Anyone who's ever sort of on film Twitter, which is Twitter, but, you know, just with, you know, people following people who talk about films, there's been a lot of drama over the last week with various bullying, trolling and cancel culture towards certain individuals. Now, it's not going to be my place to comment on the actions that led to the online vitriol, but it definitely showed the ugly side of Twitter. And sort of given sort of recent events with Caroline Flack and whatever, a lot of people have got like the hashtag be kind and are trying to put a bit of positivity back into it. You know, obviously this doesn't help, but, you know, I started using Twitter for my work at the cinema and then sort of started my own account because I really enjoyed it. Obviously in the game that we're in, where, you know, you want to reach people and promote your work, whether it's podcasts or writing and stuff like that, kind of social media has become kind of essential in order to reach people. But, you know, I've met new people, had great discussions and discovered new films and new TV shows and stuff to enjoy. And I thought it'd be nice to use this moment for us to be kind and show support to others and maybe just sort of recommend something or someone or a website or a podcast that we've all found purely through Twitter and something like that. So, Kim, I'm going to come to you first. What are you, do you enjoy using Twitter? You know, have you, what have you found on it and what would you like to recommend for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm quite lucky in that I've never really had a bad experience with Twitter. I think, like, the film Twitter people I've come across, particularly, like, the horror community, are just really nice. I feel like a lot of people who are really into horror films are the kind of people who were bullied in high school, so we all kind of, like, group together and we're all really, like, nice to each other. I've got a really strong, like, Twitter family from other podcasts I listen to. It's a really nice way to, like, connect to the fans and stuff. So yeah, I think it's a great place to just talk to people, like, in different countries and things that you would never come across and kind of share stuff that you love. So it's great. But I thought I would recommend an article which I read last night, and when I finished reading it, I said to my boyfriend, I was like, that was so devastatingly good. Like, one, it was amazing. I just loved it. And two, as a writer myself, I was so jealous of some of the sentences in it. They were just, I was just like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. So it was a piece by Mackenzie Bartlett, which is on Screen Queens. Screen Queens are doing a lot of Women in Horror Month stuff just now because February is Women in Horror Month. I wrote something for them about the Alien series. So when they were sharing kind of all the posts, there was one by Mackenzie, which was called, "Aside from Serial Killers, the Real Villain of the Scream Franchise is Our Expectations of Women." And it sort of talks about how like Sydney's mother is like the main character of the Scream series, and really like the ideal that we have of her in our head is sort of what the like sexist men characters in the film kind of push on her. We have this expectation of what like a mother and a woman and a wife should be like, and people aren't happy with her, and it basically spawns four separate sets of serial killers because of this one woman. And it's just such an interesting, like, I've read a lot of stuff about horror films and a lot of stuff about Scream because they're one of my favorite series, and it was just such a really like interesting like angle about it. And I've written before about like mothers and horror films, and it was like a total like angle I'd never considered, and it was just brilliant. So I would say check out Screen Queens in general, definitely all the Women in Horror Month, because there's been some fantastic stuff. But this article by Mackenzie Bartlett was just like, oh my God. I even tweeted her. I was like, that was amazing. She was like, oh my God, thank you. I was like, no, seriously, like, I read a lot of horror stuff, and just to be that like excited to read someone's stuff was, yeah, it was fun.
Excellent. And I actually read your Alien Mother article yesterday, and I thought it was really well written and fantastic, so well done you.
thank you.
We're sharing the love here. Lee, what do you make of Twitter, and what are you going to recommend for us?
Well, I am a serial muter, to be honest with you, Dallas, which maybe helped. I have hashtag film Twitter muted forever. I have film Twitter as two separate words, also kind of muted. I am just, like, things annoy me or anything like that, or, like, if I want to be in denial about Liverpool winning in the league, etc., mute that, mute the manager, mute the players. I think I've muted every star sign as well. So it doesn't work really on Instagram, but, you know, it helps make my kind of, you know, Twitter experience just that little bit easier. And I'm the same as you, Dallas. I thought Kim's piece was excellent, and the same that piece you recommended as well, Kim. I noticed it through the back of your recommendation. Mm-hmm. I love the Alien franchise as well, and I thought, yeah, a fantastic piece. And I think that's one thing that I know I'm pretty bad at, you know, I do have my moments, stuff like that, where it's like people will make good content and podcasts, blogs, think pieces and stuff, and I, you know, I'll go, I will share that, or, you know, like it or something like that. But sometimes it's just that little word of saying, I really liked what you did, that was good, or made me think, or something like that. And I think that can be worthwhile, because I suppose between all three of us and beyond, we all produce so much content, blogs and stuff like that. And something someone posts at 3 PM will be completely lost in a Twitter feed by maybe 3:50 or something like that. And I think sometimes it's nice just to go, I like that, or good work there. And, you know, just praise people, make it feel like it was worth their while just making something. And I think that's something that I like to try and want to do a bit better of just going, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I think I barely ever go, good show today, guys, really enjoyed that, or something like that. And I think I should do that more. In terms of positivity, I think I want to echo something almost Kim said, is a podcast I really like. I think there's far too many Star Trek podcasts out there. There's too many. but one that I think is really fantastic is one called Trek Ranks. And it's the same as sort of like Kim. Like, I was a Star Trek fan, probably got made fun of, like, at school, etc. You would get bullied for liking these sorts of things. And I think Star Trek online community is pretty shitty for the most part. I mean, it's day 4 of people having a discourse about the latest episode, which I'm tired of, but there's a podcast called Trek Ranks, and I've been lucky enough to be a guest on it once or twice, hosted by Jim Muirhouse, who is a really positive guy. And it's just like coming on, you pick a subject, what are your 5 episodes that you would recommend for this specific subject, you pick your hashtag, you pick your 5-word summary, you talk about it, and it's really positive. You know, there's like hundreds of episodes, countless movies, everything like that. And I think it's a really positive show, and one that I think really kind of does something a bit unique and different. So yeah, I would recommend the Trek Ranks podcast.
Fantastic. Yeah, I definitely will add that to my, not my watch list, but my listen list. So yes, I will definitely be doing that one as well. And what I'd like to recommend for everyone this week is a fairly new website. It's called Outtake Mag, and it was co-founded by Laura Poitier and Snae Rupert, and this is sort of one that I came up with, I've come across through, it's kind of through Twitter, and the fact that Twitter is really good, I think, in, you sort of find sort of fellow film fans and stuff like that. But one of the great things is when you go to a film festival is you sort of find people in person that you've only known through Twitter. It's that great thing of, you know, they've got a badge where it says it's got their name, it's got their outlet, but what it should really have is also their Twitter handle, because that's basically how many people know each other. And so certainly with London Film Festival this year, you know, there's a great bunch of people who would always sort of be in the sort of same queues and stuff like that, and you just get talking and you just make friends and stuff like that. And a lot of these people are working on Outtake magazine at the moment, and it's a really sort of good site for sort of up-and-coming writers who are really doing sort of fantastic work with sort of reviews and sort of great features on there, and sort of getting in about there and getting interviews with the talent. And it's not always on the big films, it's all a lot of the sort of smaller independent films which do need a voice as well, and they're sort of giving that to them. So you can check them out. It's you can check them out on Twitter at Outtake Mag, and that's my recommendation for the week. And I think, yeah, it's like you say, Lee, it's something that we should all maybe do more of, is not just sort of do a simple retweet, but you sort of yeah, it's always nice to hear, you know, good job. And so I'm going to be doing that a lot more of as well, and just sort of giving some good feedback. And if people would like to give good feedback for the Filibuster podcast, you can do that by going onto iTunes and, of course, giving us a 5-star rating. And we'd love to hear what you think. And you can even sort of tweet us and stuff like that. So, you know, if people did want to, heaven forbid, contact us on social media and hopefully say nice things, where would they be able to find you all? Kim, where can they find you?
I am on Twitter and Instagram at WickedSister69. Yeah, come speak to me. Everything's open and public, and I'm always happy to make new pals.
And Lee, where could people get a hold of you?
Yeah, if I've not muted you or switched off your retweets, because I do that quite a lot as well, you can find me on Twitter at @LeeHutchison_.
And you can find me on, I've changed my Twitter handle recently because I thought I might as well put my name in it because I'm not doing as much stuff on my blog. And then, of course, you realize that you look at your old business cards and they actually still have the old one. So I'm probably going to have to change it back. For currently, you can get me at DallasKing1138, which is, of course, a film reference in there as well. But, you know, we're going to be knee-deep in the festival next week. So our next episode is going to see the start of our Christopher Nolan retrospective, where every month we're going to be leading up to the release of Tenet. We're going to review two of Nolan's films. So first up, it's going to be Following and Memento. If we remember to record it, that is. We've got a short-term memory, see? We've got a problem with that, so you never know. But we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.